WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Thank you, Larry, for bearing with me for our slight technical difficulty. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. We have a great lineup before us this evening. We actually, my first guest is already here, Emily Burns, who is a Republican running for the 4th Massachusetts congressional seat, is already here. So she'll be joining us right after traffic. Then, after we speak a little bit with Emily and get to find out about her campaign for office, we will speak with Brandon James Griffin. Brandon is a representative for the Workers' Party of Massachusetts. And I scratch my head and I say, the Workers' Party? Okay, well, I guess they will find out what the Workers' Party is all about and what ideals they share or they bring to the table when it comes to their candidates. I believe that Brandon may also be a candidate for office, but when I had sought out an individual to talk a little bit about the party, he was ready, willing, and able to join me here in studio and talk to us a little bit about his particular party. So we'll talk with Brandon coming up at 6:40. Hour number two, we will speak with Tony Branch. Tony Branch has been on the radio program several times previously. And Tony, of course, is someone who is on a city board in the city of Brockton. He's also a radio personality. And tomorrow, Brockton is one of a few communities that are going to be holding their elections. We know everybody's focused on what's happening up in Boston. Is we're going to choose another mayor? Well, here in the suburbs, there are some races. I think Weymouth is also another community. But Brockton is yet another, as you have races for mayor, at-large counselor, ward counselor, and school committee. So we'll talk with Tony about that and find out what issues have resonated with the voters. And then we will close things out with Mark Green. Mark Green, who is not only an attorney, but you can actually hear him every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. is about this. So what about that law? So we will talk with him about wills and estate planning. You ever ask yourself about how do I go about putting together a will, or what is it? What goes into estate planning? Well, we will have an opportunity to speak with Mark Green about that, and also get an idea as to how the radio program is going. Get a check with him as to some other things that he covers when he does his regular radio program. So we're going to do that coming up in just a few moments. I think it's time now for us to find out what's happening out on the roadways. Of course, it's being brought to you here by Brennan's Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now in Hudson, New Hampshire. Lisa DeMilo is going to bring us the final report.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway southbound is inching along from the tunnel to Columbia Road. And again, from Granite Ave to the split, northbound's jammed. From the Braintree split to Freeport Street, then you hit the brakes. From the Mass Pike up into the tunnel, Route 3 south, spotty delays from the expressway to Route 18. 93 south is busy from the Braintree split to Route 24. Northbound is sluggish from Logan Express to the split, and Route 24 south is slow from 93 to the Horse Bridge. This report is sponsored by Business Roundtable. Congress is close to making historic investments in America's infrastructure. It's up to the House to finish the job past the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, paid for by Business Roundtable. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I know a lot of companies out there are having a hard time filling their positions. Well, we're not one of them. We don't have any positions because our squad is full. My people came right back to work after quarantine, and they've been here ever since. Vax, no vax, my people don't care. They love what they do, they love doing it for you, and I love them for it. Brennan Smoke Shop is a small, family-owned and operated chain. My employees are my family. We're the Brennan Smoke Shop family. This year, a special super-duper happy Thanksgiving to Chris, Mike, Pete, Justin, Hannah, David, Brady, Jen, Linda, Amy, Carrie, Thomas, Oren, Rachel, Kiara, Katrina, Mike M., Jane, Jess, Jackie, John Paul, Jason, Heidi, Johnny, Jeffrey, my wife Mal, Mom and Leo, and last but not least, a new addition to the squad, Joshua in Rainham. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older. Proper ID is required.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right. We are back for our very first segment, and joining us is Emily Burns. Emily Burns is looking to challenge Jake Auchincloss. He is currently the congressional rep, serving the 4th Massachusetts Congressional District. Emily, welcome formally to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I really appreciate you having me on.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Yeah. So I was born in Utah. I'm the oldest of 6 kids. I've got four younger brothers, and I moved out to the East Coast to go to college. I double majored in biochemistry and music, and after that moved up to Boston, and have been here really ever since. And now I live out in Newton with my 3 kids, and we've been, like all of you, trying to navigate the last 18 months, and found it a little frustrating.
Now, you say that you had double major biochemistry and music.
Yes.
Someone who, vocal or somebody instrumental?
Piano performance.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, what on the other side, biochemical, are you doing anything with that degree?
So I went and I worked on a PhD in neuroscience down in New York for a year, and then I left and moved into the private sector, starting off doing consulting for pharma and biotech, and then I moved into enterprise software for about 10 years, after which I started my own company called LearnivOre, which was a platform to connect people to private instructors in the arts, athletics, and academics. We grew that to about 25,000 instructors across the country. Ultimately, COVID kind of put it out of its misery, and startups can be a little bit tough.
Yep.
And so I've been pretty much pouring my heart and soul actually into the Open the Schools efforts, into getting kids unmasked, and just really just trying to wrap my head around what I believe to be really terrible policy decisions of the last 18 months. So here I am running for Congress to try and fix that.
What are some of your frustrations that you're dealing with, and that you feel is kind of the seed that has spawned you running for office? And when I'm talking about COVID, what has COVID been like for you?
Yeah, so I think COVID was COVID was hard for me as it was for everybody, but I think the difference is, yeah, I look and like, you know, we're well off, and yet I still had to choose in March of last of 2020 which of my school age kids could go to school because our bandwidth wasn't sufficient. And these are like, you know, these policies were just so myopic, and yeah, you know, they simply couldn't work, and we just made these decisions that were sort of check the box, like I did something, but really didn't solve the problems and left so many people in such hard straits. So that's really been a big part of it. It's just seeing so many things that I thought we cared about, that whether or not it be access to education, good jobs, all of these things that we said we cared about, but then we just threw out the window. And all from COVID. And now it's a year and a half later. We've got these vaccines. We should be moving past, and we're just stuck. So,
what was the moment that just dawned on you that maybe instead of dealing with or watching people deal with the frustration that you felt, it was time to mobilize and become a candidate for our office? Was there a series of moments?
I think it kind of came over the course of about a year. I can tell you the moment when like my entire worldview changed, which was in May of 2020, and I was driving down listening to NPR and realizing that they were mischaracterizing things in a way that was going to ensure that children were not going to be in school the next year. And it just kind of flipped me into a, frankly, just like, well, this has got to stop. We got to fix this. And obviously, like, it wasn't, it's a political problem, so it needs a political solution. And I think, I guess at that point, I kind of started to think that, and just started to find other people to connect with too, because I mean, you know what it was like last year. You felt like you couldn't, like, if you had qualms with a decision, you couldn't question it really, because everybody was terrified, rightly so. And we were all in it together originally. But things started to seem like they were going in the wrong direction to me, and that kind of moved me towards that.
Where do you feel it's kind of went wrong? You says May 2020. Do you feel that the government and that politically, the pandemic is something that has been over manipulated by the government?
I do, and I think it's been an incredibly powerful tool for them. And you know, this isn't to say that we need to realize that all people are people and they're fallible, and doctors and scientists and they make mistakes, and we hold them to account. That's how we know that we get better results. We haven't been holding people to account for results in our state that are just terrible. I mean, we came out like 11th worst in the country as far as access to in-person education last year. We averaged the fifth lowest unemployment for the pandemic. We're still nearly twice what our unemployment was before. These are bad policies that impact everybody in so many different ways. And like I said, I just don't feel like we're talking about it really, because I think there is this sort of, we tend to just kind of shut down debate on the pandemic, particularly in this state. And so I want us to talk about this a little bit more, because I see where we are, and I see us becoming this kind of masked, submissive, permission-seeking state, which if that's what we want to be, fine, but I just don't feel like we're having that conversation to make that decision. I think it's kind of being shoved down our throats.
Is your frustration just with the mask mandates, or is it also the vaccination of our population? Does that play a role in it as well?
So I think the vaccines are really a wonderful tool. I simply don't think that they should be mandated as a requirement for participation in society. We know very well that they do not stop infection. They reduce the severity. They do not stop infection. And therefore, given that, there's a private benefit to people when they take it. There's not a public benefit. And I think that we would do, if we wanted to improve vaccination numbers, there are a lot of ways we could go about that that do not involve coercing people. At this point, we've been coerced and manipulated so much over the last year and a half. This is not the way to do it. I wrote an article the other day with five ways where we could improve vaccination levels by treating people like adults and understanding that they are making decisions. And also, we should really be targeting those to identifying people who are still at risk. We don't need to be going out after the kids. Like, they're not the ones who are ending up in the hospital. That's if parents want to do that, that's fine. But I think that there are ways to make things more effective, and the vax mandates are such a perfect example of, it's like, oh, we have a metric that we want. We want to hit this number, although they've never told us what the number is, right? But we want to check that, check that do something box. Doesn't matter if it actually achieves a specific goal. That's definitely a part of my frustration.
It's basically the government is just going through the motions.
Yeah.
Let's manufacture something that will solve the problem, even though it isn't tested and proven to actually solve the problem. Is that accurate?
Yeah, or just simply that they define the problem as a numbers thing, right? Like, you got to have whatever, 95% vaccination. So when we get that, we'll be done. And it won't matter if it actually decreased hospital utilization or increased, or what other problems came from that. The fact that we are firing people en masse in the middle of a labor shortage, the fact that we are firing essential workers who worked for the entire pandemic exposed, that all of those kinds of long-term consequences just aren't being or short-term consequences just aren't being considered. It's just, like I said, pure myopia. It's like, oh, this is the way we do it. We can only think of one way. There's no creativity.
So I would ask you, is that here in Massachusetts, there's been an ongoing battle in regards to medical law enforcement having to necessarily get the shot, get vaccinated, or lose their jobs. How do you feel about that?
I think it's immoral. I do. I think it does, because it's a private benefit. I think it should be a private choice, and I don't. And we don't force adults to always make the best decisions, right? Like, we all make poor decisions periodically, and we're not drummed out of society for those decisions. And I think if you could treat people like adults and tell them, give them a way to evaluate their risk proper, then they'll make those decisions. Or maybe they'll decide that they have other concerns. But there's clearly not an honest appreciation of what people's concerns are, right? It's like you're either too dumb or too recalcitrant to do this. And it's ridiculous.
What have you been watching? What your opponent has been doing, and what the opponent has been doing in regards to any of the situations, speaking about it? What would you do differently in regards to the situation with state troopers, individuals being laid off because they're refusing to get vaccinated? What would Emily Burns, the congresswoman, do differently?
So I would be speaking out, and I would be trying to put pressure on. I understand that Congress people don't control what the governor does, but I would be trying to influence him and to argue to make the point that we now have copious amounts of data that show that it does not stop infection, that it does, that in fact, higher levels of vaccination are not tied to lower case levels. This is published in multiple different, very well-reviewed scientific journals. And so given that, if we wanted to talk about what the goal was, then we would say, okay, so if you really think that, if you want to increase vaccination levels, let's see let's understand what people's actual concerns are, not simply assume what they are based on our preconceived notions. Try and address those concerns. And then after that, at that point, because it is a private benefit, not a public benefit, let people live with the results of their decisions.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Emily Burns, and she is challenging for the Massachusetts 4th Congressional District, and she's chatting about some of her concerns with what's going on with mask mandates and challenging, you know, threatening people's jobs, their livelihoods, whether or not they get vaccinated or not. You have three children yourself.
I do.
I'm sure that one of the prime things you also are concerned with is education, whether it's during a pandemic or post-pandemic. What are your thoughts in regards to how our children were educated during the pandemic? Could something have been done differently?
I think definitely things could have been done differently. I think one of the great media failures of the last year and a half is that we did not, people here were not bombarded with the fact that in half the country, kids were full-time in school the entire year, where ours were not returned full-time in school until late March. So there's no question we could have done different things, done things differently. I also think we really, one of the things that, I was talking with my kids' school, I remember talking early on, because I was very frightened of this initially, and did a lot of work to really understand my risk, my parents' risk, my kids' risk, and really felt that we should be trying to find ways to limit the exposure of people who were at risk. So maybe like loosening up regulations around like allowing parents to step in and maybe manage the class while an elderly teacher taught remotely, instead of just putting, you know, a Band-Aid on it, which is the masks. I mean, the masks really had a lot more to do with, you know, covering certain people's behinds than they did with protecting people and allowing people, sometimes people who were severely at risk, to go in, and I think falsely giving them a sense of confidence. So I think there are things that, I think we could have come together as a community in a way to solve this, but we didn't, and we instead it came very top down. This is a time when I think really allowing people to step in and the, you know, the government just can't solve everything. It just can't, and we've gotten where we think that, you know, we have, I think, far too much trust in government, and it doesn't, you know, I don't think it's merited, and so I do think, you know, there's a lot to do with education going forward. I think. And I think many parents have seen that, how much, well beyond COVID.
So you've been campaigning for the past couple of weeks, engaging people. What has that been like for the first time for you? And what are some of the things they're saying to you? Are they mostly COVID related, or are there other things that they bring to you?
So because the advocacy that I've done was predominantly linked to COVID, it is a lot of people who have, and because my launch video is was very focused on kind of the masking and COVID, there have been a lot of people who've reached out and said, oh my God, I didn't know there were sane people in Massachusetts. Because again, I feel like we've all been just like not literally muzzled, but also figuratively muzzled in our speech. So I've heard a lot of that. Then I've also heard people who have been saying, and I think this is an incredibly important point, like, you know, we also need to focus on the opioid epidemic, because again, particularly when it comes to young people, I mean, I don't know what we're doing focusing on like vaccinating all these kids when we should be spending those cycles focusing on the opioid epidemic, which is killing way more of them. And I just think, you know, you look at the amount of federal dollars that are flooding in and kind of oddly crippling us, right? Like it's like we're just people don't want to work, they don't, you know, we're just, like I said, we're just like flooded in cement, and we're just stuck.
Yeah, it's having an effect. It definitely, the COVID has had an effect on a lot of different industries, especially when it comes to operating a business, restaurants. There are a lot of businesses these days here on the South Shore that are looking for help, that folks have moved on or they haven't went back to work, or, you know, there's plenty of help wanted signs just right now.
Yeah.
The bodies aren't flocking to fill out an application or put forth a resume saying, I would love to work here. That's what's happening. Well, we're plumb out of time here, but I thank you so much for joining us. Is there a way, anybody who may be listening to our conversation right now, that they can get in touch with your campaign, get in touch with you, find out more about your campaign? Is there a website or social media? How can they find out more about Emily Burns?
There is. So the campaign website is emilyburns.vote, and that is EmilyBurns. And I'm also on Twitter at Emily_Burns_V, and I respond to all direct messages, and I would love to hear from you and hear your concerns and do what I can to elevate, address those things.
Emily, thank you so much, and good luck on the campaign trail. Hopefully we'll hear from you down the road and hear how things are going for you in your conversations with prospective voters for the 4th Massachusetts Congressional District.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you. We are going to step aside just for a moment. And when we come back, Brandon James Griffith, we're going to talk with him about the Workers' Party of Massachusetts. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggins Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggins makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close. Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McWiggins Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McWigginsPub.com.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AAboston.org.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are shifting gears fast and furious as we're going from one conversation to the next. And joining us is a gentleman who is here to talk a little bit about the Workers' Party of Massachusetts. He's Brandon James Griffin. And Brandon also, Brandon, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's an elected official in the town of Whitman. And you, do you sit on two boards?
That's correct. I sit on the planning...
Put that microphone right under your nose so the boys and girls at home can hear you.
That is correct. I sit on the planning board and the Board of Health for the town of Whitman.
Wow, talk about good times.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit, for folks who don't know, because it's right now we have the Democrats, the Democrat Party. We have the Republicans. I know there's unenrolled, and I think there is one other... There is like a united, I want to say it was something that was put together a couple of years ago. They were able to get like 5% of the vote during an election, and they are a party. So what is the Workers' Party of Massachusetts? Is this newly formed?
The Workers' Party of Massachusetts was formed only two years ago by a Weymouth resident named Nick Giannone. He is also running for Massachusetts State House in the 4th Norfolk District, which is Weymouth. Mm-hmm. The Workers' Party of Massachusetts is a socialist party. We are not a liberal reform party. We're not progressives. We're not Democrats. We're not Republicans. We are a socialist workers' power party.
But you're saying that at no time do any of the virtues of the party wane into already known territory, whether it's Democrats? Because I will tell you, oddly enough these days, when you look at the Democratic Party, when you look at the Republican Party, right, we've noticed over the years where the Republicans had a little bit of a breaking away, get the Tea Party, and they're pulling away, and they're more, you know, much more conservative, right? And then you have the same thing in the Democratic Party, where you have folks who are very progressive. Mm-hmm. They've yet to call themselves a party at this particular time. But what I'm noticing more and more is the folks who want to be like the Tip O'Neill, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, it's almost as though the folks who are the older Democrats and Republicans have the same virtues, but don't want to admit it because they don't want to be mistaken for the other party. But there's too many times where I've talked to a Democrat who sounds very much like a Republican, and vice versa. So, what's so different about your particular party, the Socialist Party?
Well, I do have to make the distinction that we are not the Socialist Party. There is a Socialist Party. So I don't want to conflate that. The Workers' Party of Massachusetts is a political designation. There is a Socialist Party. We are not them.
Okay.
What separates us is we have zero beholdenness to the Republicans or the Democrats. Now, when we say that, people who vote in one way tend to get niche or... the parties themselves, the system of capitalism, they are both parties of and for the capitalist economic system, regardless of the infighting between Congress and Republican Party leadership, Democratic Party leadership. They have their own disagreements on how to exploit workers. The Workers' Party is against any capitalist system or its gatekeepers, which is mainstream media, the police force, and the current two-party system, which if you break it down, we have two conservative parties, one further right.
Okay.
But that being said, we are not out to alienate. We care about the workers, period. If you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, join the Workers' Party.
The Workers' Party almost sounds like a union.
It is very pro-union.
Okay.
It's a labor party.
Okay.
I don't want to use up all our time talking about Marxist theory.
But if you want to, again, you know, we've got...
No, let's put it out there, and I would rather give a broad stroke for anyone who's going to ask the general questions. I would rather put out the general points. So if you have direct questions, instead of me reading a constitution,
sure,
which will burn through our
time. But I want to, the regular Joe,
yes,
who's going to go, I want to know what makes you different. I mean, are you for raising taxes? Are you against raising taxes? This, again, you're talking about, you know, Mr. and Mrs., you know, Massachusetts.
Correct.
Who are going to be going to the vote. How are you affecting my wallet? How are you affecting, you know, when I go to town hall, is that affecting fees? Normally it's the pocketbook that's primary.
Absolutely. We are for increasing tax revenue on the wealthy.
Okay.
We would actually look to repeal oppressive taxes against working people. Now, I'm not saying that people aren't going to pay taxes. That's not how this works.
Okay.
But we want to take from those who have the most and less from those who don't. And the point of that is to raise the awareness. We call it class consciousness. And what happens is the capitalist, meaning the landowners, the factory owners, the machinery, the people who own the means of production, as Marx would say. And that power continues to only go up to the wealthy. And you know, like they told us what would happen in the 80s, Mr. Reagan, nothing trickled down. Poverty.
Right.
No.
Right.
But I don't want to talk about past presidential mistakes, current juvenile arguments among working people. Mm. And we're arguing everywhere. We're having riots at, riots at school boards about liquid in a syringe between Joe and Jane Worker, who have to see each other at a PTA meeting, and frankly, we look ridiculous.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but it's more than just the vaccination. That people are also, I've had to sit through many of those board meetings, and it's also about whether their child has to wear face covering.
Yes,
and the government being beholding to that particular mandate. And, you know, if in fact it's with the local government, you know, if the school committee is able to have power over, well, then the folks are, they want to mobilize and shake their fist at the school board. But I believe DESE has taken that power away. And right now it lies
and
with
OSHA,
the state.
Yeah.
Right. It lies with the state until January 15th right now. They've
correct.
Since extended that. So I guess what I'm trying to find out here is while it's a novel idea, and I've said many times, that not only this state, but our country needs more than just a two-party system. The problem that we have seen over and over again is that it's been really tough for any one party or one group of people to gain any traction because of the monopoly that the Democrats, right now it's the Democrats, at least in this state, but you still have Republicans that have numbers too. You know, how do you gain traction and gain numbers in key places?
The only way to gain traction is to get into office first. This is based on a workers' movement. But if you're looking at a state house, a state senate, whose interests only side with those that hold the capital, the land, exploit people's labor. You and I, we're both workers.
Yep.
I don't know how you vote. It's not my business, but I know you're a working guy, right?
Yep.
Now, we could turn this into a discussion about how I say we just do it. This is an unprecedented time. People are suffering. People are angry. Workers are angry. They are looking through a spectrum of this. There's a labor shortage. Business owners are cheap. A, B, C, and D. The fact is, the problem is worker exploitation. Whether people like that or not is irrelevant to us. That's what we care about. We care about the working class struggle. Period.
And is this strictly focusing on at least trying to get state seats in office, or is there anything being done on the municipal level? Because I would think that if you can at least mobilize and get folks, even though it's nonpartisan,
yes,
you sit on a school committee, you sit on a select board, you sit on a town or city council. It is, it's not a party derivative, but they can still be allegiance to said party.
Yes, of course. I am not what some people would look at a progressive and call them a closet socialist. It's not a dirty word, you know.
Listen, these days, depending, everything's a dirty word, depending on the verbose that you put on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I could throw a ball, but if I put a little spin on it, it's going to be a lot different than if I just tossed it.
I mean, and there's a party... There's a pirate party, okay? So, that's okay. It's about political independence too, and not just going back to we want the entire state to read every single book about Marxism that was ever written. We want to put this out there so there is solidarity with workers outside of existing party lines, which are largely bogus. At the end of the day, do you really think up on Capitol Hill that they're terribly concerned? I mean, look at what they're doing with these bills. Give me an example.
Bills is just a blanket statement.
The reconciliation and the and Biden's infrastructure.
Okay, so you're talking on the federal level. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
At the federal level. And I'm using that because it seems to be what most people are
paying attention to.
Right.
Yep.
And they probably should stop paying attention to it, because what happens is you've got these politically aligned news outlets, the two big three-letter networks that one side will listen to and the other side won't. You have one saying you have to protect your civil liberties against mask mandates, the social distancing and all that, the COVID stuff. You have the other side saying, oh, don't listen to those uneducated idiots. It's not productive.
Now, you yourself, yeah. Now we get, again, if you're just tuning in, we have a Brandon James Griffin.
Yes.
And he's here as a representative for the Workers' Party of Massachusetts.
Yes.
But I believe that you're also a candidate for office, no?
That is correct.
Okay. And what office is that?
I am running for state representative in the 7th District for Plymouth County.
Okay. So East Bridgewater, Whitman,
and Abington.
And Abington.
Yes. Okay. Currently held by Ms. Sullivan.
Okay. Have you formally announced? Are you announcing now?
I have formally announced. We have
the party
formally
has
announced, okay, all five of our candidates. I haven't gone out and rented airtime and put on a suit, you know.
Well, it's radio, so nobody can see you. Yeah. It's okay.
I probably won't be doing that anyway.
Okay.
But yes, I am running. I have not heard of. I don't even know if Ms. Sullivan has announced her.
Whether she's seeking re-election?
Right.
Okay.
There hasn't been a Democrat announcement, but we are running together. And there's a lot of interworkings within the party where not only do we want to get into office and take reform and push it, just say no. People, we've been working and reforming since time immemorial. It doesn't really get us anywhere. And we're divided by things that are ultimately benign, and we need to stop. We need to stop. This is not about manufactured culture wars. It is infuriating that two people being exploited are going to argue about liquid in a needle or a mask. Is it a problem for some? Yes. Do other people want it? Yes. Is it worth dropping long-time friendships over? I mean, what are we doing? Mm. What are we doing?
So I would ask you, just this is kind of an early conversation, because in all fairness, if you are an announced candidate, I would love to give you an opportunity. Any other candidates that are running, whether it's for this particular office or others, what do you feel early out of the gate are going to be some of the key issues for your said political race for the 7th Plymouth?
The 7th Plymouth District is woefully lacking in affordable housing. Low-income housing, mixed-income housing. You see, every week, you take a different left and there's a new luxury condominium complex. Those aren't affordable housing units. Now, we don't have time again for that whole top to bottom. I want to get on the Joint Housing Committee, and I would love to serve on Ways and Means. That's down the road, of course.
Yeah.
But we are not in a position to wait for legislation. There's now problems and then problems.
Okay.
Right now, it's November. I was speaking with a woman yesterday. We are currently doing an outreach, a program for tenant unionizing in Randolph. There's some of the conditions are just horrid. And the corporation that owns the company we're currently targeting is a real estate investment company in Chicago. They buy and sell for a profit. The people are liabilities, really. And we are up against it. I was speaking with a woman yesterday. She's disabled. She has a history of substance abuse. Obviously, I'm not going to give any names. That's not what the point of this. But the point is that story is not the outlier. This is going on everywhere. People need a roof.
Warrants a second return to Monday Night Talk. We can why don't we have you back on in a few weeks?
May I?
Yes, quickly, because we are out of time.
It will be
if you will give me the website and information.
Yes, I can be reached at, of course, facebook.com/BJGriffin4. That's the number. Mass. Twitter handle is the same. At BJGriffin4, that's the number, Mass. And very quickly, I want to give you the rest of our candidates.
Okay, how many candidates do you have?
There are four in addition to myself.
Please do.
Jake Zawalik of North Oxford, running for State Senate in the Worcester and Norfolk District against current incumbent Ryan Fatman. Laura Saylor of Mansfield, running for State Senate in the Bristol and Norfolk District against incumbent Paul Feeney. James Weckbacker of Plymouth, running for State Rep. Nick Giannone of Weymouth, running for State Rep, Norfolk 7th. And, of course, Brennan James Griffin for Plymouth District 7. Workers' Party, Socialist Party. Questions, please ask. I'm not scary. I don't think the rest of y'all are scary.
Okay.
It's time to dialogue. Kevin, you're my first interview. You're the man. Thank you.
Brandon James Griffin here for the Workers' Party. Thank you for joining us. And we are going to step aside. That concludes the first hour. I cannot believe it flew by. But coming up next, Tony Branch joining us to talk a little bit about the city elections in Brockton. Coming up in just a moment. You tune in to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck, snapback or rock. Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, later this hour. Can't believe we're just starting the hour, and I'm telling you what's going on. Later this hour, we got Mark Green. So what about that law? Come in. He's going to join me. As you know, he has a show every Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m. Do you tune in? I try to. In between my pancakes and my sausage, I tune in to find out about laws and estate planning. The left you hear is a good friend, gentleman, who he serves in so many different capacities for the city of Brockton. Southeastern Regional School Committee, yes. Vice Chair, soon to be the chairman.
Maybe if I get to election, the votes next week,
Also, he is, do you still chair the commission
on diversity of the city of Brockton? And as you know, I'm also the first vice president of the NAACP, and I'm basically on everybody's board in Brockton. So I get around, my friend. It's all about service.
And we'll throw in a caveat, also a radio personality. But
somewhat. No one is bigger than you, brother.
Oh, please.
Brother from another mother.
Take the hip waders off. It's all good. I brought you in here because I believe that you're going to be part of a fantastic panel. Brockton Community Access.
You got it.
Going live with results.
Yep.
I believe Richard Bath is going to be playing host.
Yep.
And you have a slew of folks.
Yep.
Talk. Big election.
It's a big election in the city of Brockton, as always, with respect to every 2 years. You know, I'm one that has always been concerned about, does the mayor really have the capacity to make change when he's basically running for re-election of the following year? Let's be direct and honest about this. Mayor Sullivan has had some challenges, as most municipal executives have had across the Commonwealth and across this country with respect to this pandemic. What did people want him to do differently? I really don't know. Taking the politics out of it, I think, quite frankly, the work that he's done with respect to the pandemic in our municipality is second to Governor Baker. So this is not—it's not about Republican Democratic politics. When a pandemic hits, it's about what we need to do to save lives in our country. And I think, quite frankly, this administration, the Sullivan administration, has contributed absolutely to that. But he has a strong opponent in Tina Cardoso.
Yeah.
She's
a fighter.
She is a warrior. Mm-hmm. You know, Tina, I know personally. I love Tina. She's been on the ground fighting for people for years. She and I actually went to the same high school in Boston. And I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't underestimate her. But I think that this is an election that Mayor Sullivan's probably going to win. But I think that one of the things I was talking to my good friend Newby, and he said this, is that if in fact...
Stop.
Oh.
You said it all wrong. What? First off, I know what you're talking about. And he would be pulling his hair out of his head right now because you didn't say the Emmy award-winning documentarian.
Newbie is so humble, Raven. Newbie is so humble, he wouldn't be.
He's got that statue everywhere.
That's right.
God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him. Newbie's done great work. But I think to his point, people like him that point out that if, in fact, the Cardoso run for mayor has contributed to the conversation with respect to what needs to change today, not long term, I think that it is a contribution that we all should appreciate. But I am a household political scientist, and looking at this from the street, I think that Sullivan's going to win. It's probably, I'm looking maybe a ratio 65-35.
You look at the number, and usually you know, talking to pundits who look at the numbers.
Yeah.
How big of a number during the September preliminary? It was over 1,000.
Yeah, it was over 1,000. I think he's going to do well this time around. I think that one of the things that people are not talking about, hearing the mayor yesterday on my program, so they've put up these signs. I think he said about 75 across the city, the vote November 2nd. That's something, quite frankly, that we've been looking for the city to do for a very, very long time. People seem to forget that it is an election day. And so I appreciate the administration doing that. But the politics behind that, I think that's going to increase his number. I think there's going to be a reminder that there is an election. Now, The concern that we all have with the city of Brockton, unlike those of us that have been raised in Boston, you know, typically in Boston, other than this election, you know, I've been watching what's been going on with Michelle Wu and the other individual. You know, we use a convalesce around one particular candidate, at least the African-American community. We are all shocked with respect to the Boston election, how we didn't get a black finalist. But let me say this to you. Brockton's a different, much different than a Boston candidacy. And the reason why I say that is because the multiple ethnic groups really, really surround their particular ethnic candidate. And it's actually concerning. I've been talking to people about this in my conversations with them on a grassroots level, is that we really should be looking at the best candidate that can win the office, but also we should be looking at those that have done work, that have really been on the ground to do the work, and not go into a model where we're only, like from the 30s, 40s, and the 50s, where we're only going to support this sort of candidate. And so that's the model that I'm not appreciating what's happening in the city of Brockton. This is why I believe that the political power structure in Brockton with respect to not having a person of color elected is going to be a continued pattern of not happening until these groups are able to get together.
But prior to the preliminary election, there was a great push, and there were conversations about let's make a change across the board, school committee, city council, mayor. Let's vote out the old, you know, all the old boy network, and let's put in people who are resemble those who live and work in the city of Brockton.
But I think that, and I think that many voters in the city will agree with this, we're at a time in the United States of America that just because you're black doesn't mean that you need to be running for political office. I know that's an uncomfortable conversation among my peers, but the reality of it is that if you are a person of color in anywhere, running for election anywhere in this country, you have to have some history around community action, civil rights, economic development, et cetera, et cetera. You are not respectfully entitled, simply because you're black, to be elected to an office where there is a predominantly minority community. And you know, I'm one. Diversity is my mandate. And I hate to have this conversation where people say that we are a majority minority. I don't know what that, I know what it means in terms of census. I know what it means in terms of legalese. But at the end of the day, Kevin, and I know that people are going to get angry with me. And this is not a cliche. We got to be running for these offices. First of all, qualifications, and second of all, why can't we just run as an American? I mean, people go like, "You got a lot of nerve, Bishop." But bottom line is that I challenged people a decade ago that please do not run as the black candidate. Please do not run as the Cape Verdean candidate. Don't run as, run because you want to do great things based upon a mandate from the citizens of Brockton. And let me also tell you this, you know, this goes back to the so-called Democratic politics of the city of Brockton. You have a significant race with Marlene Green running in Ward 1 against Minicello. You know, if you anybody looked at some of the stuff Minicello has recently said in talking to the assistant superintendent for diversity, it could be a bit alarming. And I know Minicello very well. But at the end of the day is that you have a Marlon Green where the Dems, the city committee could really get behind this guy and get him elected in that particular ward. So for me, it's like people are playing politics. There's strong conservative views. And I people know that, you know, I'm a fiscal conservative. I believe that we don't need to rely on people necessarily in these days. So I have some very strong views. But on the same token, I think that it's important that if we're going to follow the national mandate regarding so-called progressives, so-called, that needs to somehow translate into city elections. And I haven't seen that happen. Then, you have this at-large race, which is very interesting.
Yeah, you actually have a former mayoral candidate who is one-term at-large.
Yeah.
Gene Bradley, Droncourt.
Yeah.
You got
David Texera. The question is, with respect to, for that race, I see Farwell. I see Rita Mendez. Rita may even top Moses in getting reelected.
She's not a politician. She's a mom.
That's right. That's right. Although she changed some of those signs now. But with that said, but we understood what Rita did. We understood what Rita did.
Absolutely.
They're saying that this seat now is between a Gary Keefe, a person that has been on the planning board, really, really has the government experience against small business owner, David Texera. Now, David Texera has been able to get his signs. Lord, my God, if anybody goes into Brockton right now, you see the signs of David Texera everywhere. People raise concerns with respect to, influence. we don't know, because he's on the license commission. But I can tell you that I think that's going to be a close race. But I believe that some mistakes have been made with respect to people saying that, they're running respectfully an ethnic candidacy. And I think that Gary Keefe is probably going to be that fourth person. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll pull out. He's very close to my good friend Mark Lawton. Mark might pull some folks out for him. But Mark didn't do too well in the mayoral.
I was going to say that. He had horses in the last race as well.
That's what I said. So Mark didn't do too well. No. So I know. We know, all of us know that David Texera is a very strong supporter of the late Mayor Bill Carpenter, rest his soul. But I don't know if he's going to be able to pull them together, especially when he hasn't been very good friends with the most significant Cape Verdean, first black mayor of Brockton, Mayor Moses Rodriguez. So it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to pull from each other.
So I'm going to ask you, wards 1, 2, and 3... Those are all basically open seats that were whittled down in the preliminary.
And you know how Brockton goes. Former school committee members usually transition into city council races regardless of anything.
Tom Monahan didn't run for 2.
Yeah. Tom's going to miss.
Tim Cruz.
Tim's over at assistant city clerk. We'll see how that goes. People are complaining about that. But
Dennis Ianeri, your parliamentarian.
Yes. What did they call Dennis? Because Moses is going to take his place now. Dennis is the...
Parliamentarian.
No, not the parliamentarian. This is the other one.
The dean of the Brockton City Council.
We're going to miss Dennis.
On the tip of his tongue right now.
Right. So you see him. But now, that's an interesting race in that ward also. Even though normally school committees... transfer into or get the city council seat. But you have my colleague, Gerson, that's on the Southeastern Regional School Committee, and there are two significant precincts in that particular ward that are of color. He may pull that off. He may pull it off. So we'll see how that goes. So I don't know. Especially, remember Tina Cardoso ran against Ioneer, and she came really close.
What three?
She came really close. Yeah. Then you have the battle in my ward, Ward 4, between Mike Smith and Susan DeCastro. That's going to be interesting. Mike Smith, small business owner, very strong views, doesn't mind going for the juggalo. And he's got a lot of small business support. But we know small businesses don't translate into votes.
Sure.
So that's going to be interesting as well.
What about Ward 6 with Mr. Jack Lally? He's been able to fend folks off, but that's another
I know the
fantastic
secret.
Race, too.
That is a fantastic race against the president of the Bad Bus Association. Let me just say this. Jack, the problem with that race is, first of all, Jack will probably win it. No, Jack's going to win it. I'm going to call it. And I think that the problem is not... is it Truxler? They're going to kill me.
It's Truxel.
Truxel. Yeah, the BAT president. What's happening with that is because politically people are saying that this is Michelle behind the scenes pushing the candidates against Jack Lally. I mean, that's the rumors in our city. And I think
you're talking about state representatives.
Exactly.
because he actually did the dirty deed running against her.
Hey, listen, let me tell you, Brockton politics... Don't run against somebody that's an incumbent. People don't forget.
And I'm sure that Michelle is feeling good because redistricting, she doesn't have to worry about
West Bridgewater. Yeah, she's actually feeling very good. And as you know, we've gotten a minority seat, and I'm sure that if Moses doesn't run for it, I'm sure that Moses is going to run for it. He would be a landslide to get that Senate seat, which will open up a at-large race. But so let me just say this. I think, you know, politics has been very interesting in Brockton. Kevin, it's a blood sport.
It totally is. You know,
I've been in this game for a long time. I was on Hillary for America. And folks really know me for when Martha Coakley ran for governor. I didn't realize that my city was a blood sport. So it gets downright and dirty, and I think that the voters see that, and I think that that speaks to a lot of the reasons why they're not coming out.
Talking with Tony Branch, who's talking about the city of Brockton. As they have the city election, we're in the eve of it. It's going to be taking place tomorrow.
That's right.
Get out and vote. What do you feel are going to be the real key issues that have been resonating with residents, with whether it's the ward council, the at-large council, mayor?
I'm going to tell you the number one issue that many people are talking about. And it's so interesting because this is supposed to be a democratic progressive city, is affordable housing. We have had over the last half of a decade, we've literally had city councilors go on a record, no more affordable housing. We've also had people define affordable housing as being Section 8, low-income Section 8 folks running in with their families, taking up all our resources, when affordable housing actually is workforce housing. It's the secretary at City Hall that's making $40,000, $50,000 a year, having the ability to stay within the city of Brockton. I think affordable housing is number one. I think second, there's been an uptick in gun violence in the city of Brockton. The uptick is isolated. I don't believe that it is gang related. People can challenge me on that. And I think that people are going to really be looking at, secondly, public safety. Thirdly, it's really about the support of young people in the city of Brockton. What are we going to do in terms of facilities? Where are folks? It's kind of the mantra that Tina Cardoso is talking about. What are we going to do with young adults? But let me also challenge people on this that are hearing me. Yes, we are certainly responsible for assisting our young people, but we are not responsible for being their parents. And I think that we need to begin as a community to really have some hard conversations around where is your child at 10 o'clock. You don't know where your child is. That's not an issue for the municipality.
And I don't think Brockton is the only community that's dealing with that. And interesting enough, look what's going on, not only at a high school like Brockton, but there are other high schools around the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
That are dealing with youth violence in school.
The school fighting has become ridiculous. It has become a fad that is reported on TikTok. I've talked to parents, and they've told me, I don't go in my child's room because of their privacy. Respectfully, as a bishop, what the hell are you talking about? Your child has no privacy. Okay. So we got something that's going on with parents. Are we going on a break? I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, we got something that's going on with our parents. We need to, one of my good friends, Leona Martin, said this at the NAACP, we need to do something in terms of supporting our parents, too, because these kids are, respectfully, somewhat out of control, and a lot of that does not have to do with us having facilities for them. It's just that there is something going on with the way we're rearing them.
But it seems as though this is something that's been more post-COVID. I mean, prior to COVID, were we hearing about fight clubs breaking out?
No,
after
and, but
school?
Fight the fight clubs were existing, and I think what is happening in terms of our media is that I'm trying to be as respectful as I can.
Please.
But we need to stop blaming the pandemic for bad kids. I know I'm going to get a lot of negative, but seriously, I'm one that has talked about for the last 7 months about emotional support and what we need to do in terms of transitioning into that. I'm the one that's been on the forefront of that, especially on my own school committee. But I'm also going to tell you this. I'm not going to blame the pandemic for kids fighting in school. Should they be handcuffed and arrested by cops? Absolutely not. There's ways of dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we're getting into a world when bringing into politics in supporting our young people where we're making up excuses for bad behavior, and we need to stop doing that.
Do you feel social media is the main culprit?
Yes, absolutely. It's way too easy. I mean, you got the TikTok challenges. Why isn't TikTok stopping the challenges where, you know, the new one was supposedly punch a teacher in the face month. Why isn't that not being stopped by TikTok? Why aren't these executives being held accountable? We're picking on Facebook, that, you know, billionaire kid that's running Facebook. But with respect to TikTok and Instagram and these kids that are posting, it's not hard. You see some of these posts, it's not hard to find out who these children are, sure, who these young adults are, in order to talk to them and their parents. But we've become so comfortable in saying that they're low income kids and they require, they're in crisis, and we all this labeling needs to stop and really deal with, if your child needs to be disciplined, the child needs to be disciplined. The question is what do we need to do? What type of discipline do we give out? And I'm the one, as you know, that really fought for getting rid of the term disciplinary action, looking at other methods. But at the end of the day, you're bringing guns to school, you're punching teachers in faces, there has to be repercussions to that. And for parents to tell me that they don't go in their rooms because of privacy, I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating. This is, a lot of parents have said this, and I'm a little bit like, wait a minute, what's going on? And then, you know, they all hear, oh, you're old school, you know, that's because you're in your religion. It's nothing to do with religion. Your child steps out of line, you need to discipline them. Let me tell you what my mother used to do.
Oh, please tell.
God knows, don't pull the files.
We can go back and forth here.
Let me tell you. My mother used to tell me, Anthony, that's what she called me, Anthony or Anthony. Anthony, A-N-T-O-N-E-Y. Anthony, because she don't know why my mother spelled my name like that. She says, Anthony, let me tell you something. If you act up, I'm going to come and whip your boop right in front of the teacher. That's how we were raised.
That's how I was raised.
That's how we were raised until...
That's how I was raised. I don't want to get into details, but there's... It was more than verbal sometimes. Yeah. And
I'm going to tell you.
But that's how...
Yeah. You put the fear of God in. The fear of God was in children. Let me tell you something. If mama didn't go to church, she made us go to church. Right. And you showed up, or the priest... Well, they were called father. The priest would call from St. Mary's. Hey, you know, Tony and his brother are not here. Yep. So for me, it's like, this is a different generation where they have these iPhones and they're sexing, pornography, and they're fighting. And no one knows about this. Right. Come on. Sorry about that. We're going.
No. Yeah. No.
You and I can talk all night.
But yeah, and we're not advocates for old school.
No.
I think that... Some of the old school ways still live with us because it you realize that there was a line you didn't want to cross.
And you know, Kevin, what's interesting is that some of the stuff that I've looked at, there are actually parents that are in these videos when these kids are fighting. And you and I remember the time, you know, I'm not giving away my age, but you know, my first president I voted for was Ronald Reagan. I told people that, and they look at me like I'm crazy. I like Ronald Reagan because he didn't want the United States to look punkish. I'm upset with Biden for apologizing. Stop apologizing. Sorry, I'm getting on a tangent. But one of the things that used to happen was adults would intervene, could grab your child. You do that today, you could get in a fist fight with the other parent.
That's right.
You could break up a fight. You can't do that anymore. It's like adults are watching the desecration of young adults in America. And that's not a political issue. Yeah. That's a moral decline. And so for me, I get a little frustrated because, yes, I want to make sure that, and you know, people talk about the COVID resources. Yes, there's trillions of dollars right now. I didn't say billions. Actually, trillions probably. Yep. That's in the American economy right now from us flooding everybody with money. We flooded. It's just a flood of money. I don't know that it should be that easy for the funding to go to social programs that are not. And this is back to one of the things that, like Tina is talking about. All this stuff has to be evidence-based. Things that work, we should fund. Things that are guesstimates, we should not be funding.
Amen. Well, I'm going to ask you one final question.
Go
again,
for it.
We've been talking with Tony Branch. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow night. If you and Brock.
PCA.
BCA, is that 9 or channel 12?
We're going to be on 9 and 12 because we'll be also on the government channel.
Start at right when the polls close or before?
We're going to start a little bit before. So I think Ed's going to be at City Hall reporting off, and I'll be in studio. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit behind.
So this is your opportunity. So for mayor,
yeah,
you're predict who is going to win?
I think Mayor Sullivan will be reelected. I see a ratio of 65-35.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We do this, and again, when you come here, I like having the conversations, even if they are not comfortable conversations. That's what this forum is for, is to
absolutely
talk, to talk about the things that are important to those folks
who are
watching and the folks who are tuning in.
That's it.
That's what's important, and that's our jobs, is to bring forth the things that are difficult and to find solutions for the difficult problems.
And it's not personal. It's about what's best for young people in this country. Thank you, Kevin, WATD, for having me on.
He is Tony Branch. He'll be back in a couple of... We'll have him back on a couple of weeks.
After the election, let's see what happens.
Absolutely. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to ask that question. So what about that law with Mark Green? Coming up here, Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggins Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggins makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close. Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McWiggins Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McWigginsPub.com.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, go to AA.org. To find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit AABoston.org.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Fantastic conversations being had here this evening. And we thank you very much for tuning in. And yet another conversation is being served up in just a few moments here. Myself being kind of an older individual. I'm getting to a certain point where I have to start pondering some of the important things. And that is, what happens after me? What about all of the things that I have? Should I have a will in place? Should I do estate planning?
Interesting questions.
Those are very interesting questions. Should I be asking myself that right now?
Well, you know something? The truth is, you should be thinking of that when you turn 18. And that's a serious...
No kidding.
I just saw the shock on your face. For example, do you know that if you have a child at home or anywhere that's reached the age of maturity, which is 18, okay, and they become incapacitated of some kind, they end up in a hospital, they can't speak for themselves. So here you are as a parent... And you go, oh, my God, Johnny's injured. I got to go help him out. You run into the hospital and you say, doctors, what's going on? The doctors don't have to answer one question. Shocking.
You know what's funny? I actually heard you on a radio show say that. I was amazed that you actually said that.
It's mind-boggling because you think of it as a parent and you say, wait a second, I'm paying for his school. I'm paying for his insurance. I'm paying for the lunch. I'm paying for everything. And the question is, he's reached maturity, she, and therefore is an adult. And unless you have proper documentation, you cannot direct an administrator or a hospital or a doctor to do anything for that individual. And that's frightening. So that's when I say when you're 18, that's when you got to start thinking about it. But you bring up the original question. It says, what happens when I'm dead? Okay. Now, no one really knows what happens when you're dead. But the point is this. People come into our office, and by the way, my name is Green, Mark Green. I'm an attorney.
Mark Green, radio show every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.
10:30, yeah. We talk about a number of issues, and one of the issues that we discuss is estate planning, and that's kind of a hoity-toity phrase. You know, I'm from Dorchester, so I don't really get off on this hoity-toity stuff, but the point is this. Most people, when they first come into our office, they say, I don't have a will. Kevin, the last thing you'll ever need in your life is a will. And as a matter of fact, you won't need it at all because you'll be gone. All right. So what do you really need is the question, right?
Yeah.
So and it begins when you're 18. You need to have somebody in place that can direct administrators, doctors in hospitals, et cetera, to take care of you the way you wanted to, because you can't speak for yourself. That, to me, is the most important document that you will ever, ever have. You're talking about a healthcare proxy, and that's giving somebody the authority to direct doctors to handle your health,
mm-hmm.
okay? Now, what I love it when you go into the hospitals and day surgery, for example, and they make you fill out a number of forms, and one of the forms is called, quote, a healthcare proxy, okay? The authority that that piece of paper gives you is the ability to say yes or no. That's it. So the doctor comes out and says, Mr. Tosche, we've got somebody in here that we understand you're the healthcare agent. Yep, I have the paper that the nurse gave me here, administrator gave me. I got it right here. Well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this, this, that, and the other thing. And so, yes or no? Well, the first question is, well, what's wrong with him? Why do you need to do that? Yeah. And by the way, maybe there's another doctor that we should be looking at. No. Yes or no? The authority that that one-page document that a lot of people get when they walk into the hospital gives the authority to say yes or no. That's it. The question I ask you, Kevin, is if you were in a position where you needed to have someone stand in your shoes, what authority would you like to give them?
My goodness.
Pretty broad, I would think.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of us that are married say, okay, I want, because it's based on trust. The biggest factor is trust, okay? So you said, I trust my wife. I've been married for 25, 35, whatever it is. She says, no matter what I could possibly ask or do, I want my wife to have the same authority to do. Great. That authority has got to be articulated in that document. If it isn't, the administrator is in business, right? They don't want to get sued by anybody. They don't want to sue guys like us, right? So they say, wait a second. If the authority that you're asking, what you're asking me to do, is not specifically addressed in your healthcare proxy, I don't have to do it. So, once again, how much authority? What authority? This is not a one-page deal. This is 8-10 pages sometimes. Very thorough, depending upon the individual. That's why I get such a big kick out of Kevin. You see, come on down. You see it in the news and rather commercials. Come on down. We'll give you a healthcare proxy for $150. Well, what the hell do you think that? What good is that? Excuse me. I'm from Dodge. What good is that? Okay. So the idea is you have to give some serious thought to who. And a backup, just in case that person can't make it, that's called an alternate, right? And they don't have the same authority at the same time, because you don't want two doing the same thing at the same time. One says black, the other says white,
yeah,
you have a problem.
Yeah, it's duking it out, right?
Right. And that happens. It happened to my family. When my father died, my mother, same thing. Five kids, everybody coming in with a different point of view. Wrong deal. Okay. Yeah, so.
Happened with my mom. It's funny you say that.
It happens so frequently. It's sad. It's sad. So, but it can avoid it. And we're in the avoidance prevention business. And so that is the most important document when you're 18. There's two more elements to your health that people have to really consider. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard, folks out there have heard of HIPAA.
Yep.
HIPAA is a Federal Privacy Act. So when you go into an elevator at the hospital, everybody goes, shh, can't talk about anything in here. Right? But what that means is that the doctors and administrators can hide behind that Privacy Act and prevent your healthcare agent from obtaining the documents or the records or anything that they wanted. So there is a second document called the HIPAA release. And that means I'm releasing you, Mr. Hospital. You can't hide behind this. Just like if I asked for it, you've got to give it to my healthcare agent. Same as that. Without that, they can just stifle everything you've put into this healthcare proxy. And then, once again, you know, you've got to get what you pay for. You know, it just, this isn't, you know, going to Sears, get two tires and match the one you bought at Kmart. You can't do that. You got to all kind of fit together.
Well, the problem is the Sears at Kmart and all.
All right. So are we in about, I'm not a sponsor.
But I'm just kidding.
Your point is, Kevin.
No, but you're right, though.
It's got to match, right?
You're right.
And so the third piece, and there's a third leg to this. And we're just talking about health while you're still with us, right? And that is a living will. Now, this is one of the most private and deeply concerning documents there ever was invented. And I'll pick on me, for example. If I am ever in a persistent vegetative state, I'm never coming out, do I want my family, kids, grandkids, and all, coming up, rolling me over, leaving a beer there, or, and when I'm not even there, really, a mental state?
Yeah.
Do I want that? The answer is no, I don't. Right. Yeah. But there's plenty of people that do. There's plenty of people that say, look at Ted Williams, okay? Ted Williams' family. There's all kinds of people that will do things to keep hope alive. But mine is no. If it's a persistent vegetative state, I do not want to be treated, just let me go. That's called a living will. Don't confuse that with a DNR. No, it's a living will.
Okay.
In Massachusetts, if you have a living will, meaning I'm in a persistent vegetative state, doctor, let me go. If you don't have a healthcare agent, that piece of paper means nothing. It has to come through the power of attorney. It has to come through that agent. So the agent is standing there saying, oh, by the way, a fellow person here that's injured has got this living will, as a matter of fact, so he gives it to the doctor. If that person doesn't exist, the healthcare agent doesn't exist, it doesn't matter. Doctors can do whatever they want. Now, that do no harm, that's their theory, right? And I help them to believe that, subscribe to that. So back to your original question, what do you need? Those three documents when you're young, you absolutely need them. The fourth one is a funky name. It's called power of attorney. It's a document that grants someone else the authority. What authority? It depends upon what's in the document, to do something for you on the financial side. You do this a lot when people say, oh, like, I can't make the closing for my house, so I'm going to have my Uncle John go as a power of attorney. That's called a limited power of attorney, limited just for that. You can't go in your bank accounts. You can't buy a car for you. But some other things, as we grow older, now you want somebody that can access Social Security, maybe a pension, some other places, and move money around that maybe you are unable to do. So you give this power of attorney to your spouse, someone that, once again, built on trust, that can do these things to make your life easier. And that's what that's all about. And the older you get, the more important those four documents are.
And again, if you are just tuning in, that's the voice of Mark Green. No, it's not. It's not Sunday morning, but we're here. and you know, again, and I have prided myself at being at this radio station for nearly 10 years to try to do crossover conversations, because there are a lot of great conversations that are had on these airwaves.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of great music, too. Give
Larry a nod.
Larry does an awesome job on Saturday nights. Probably one of my favorite DJs on the station besides Rob Akala. But shows like yours that provide information for folks who aren't in the know, who are so busy with life.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's you talk about having a will and having one at the age of 18. How often should I have that will updated? Because you go through life changes.
Changes, absolutely. Back to the show for just a second, because I want to mention that.
Please do.
What we stick with, what I believe is important to people. We talk about tax, income tax, federal income tax. There's people that Chris James hasn't got a return back. I heard it the other morning, and people want to know why. So we have an accountant come on. He's my accountant. I trust him. We have a reverse mortgage specialist, because as folks get older, and there's a real stigmatism against it, and that's what we try to clear up. We break a lot of these busts, these myths that are out there, that people have got false impression as to what that is and how it can help an elderly person through the rest of their lives. We have estate planning, how to get yourself prepared for the day you're going to retire, because that's what estate planning is,
right?
You know, and so mental health counselor, we have her on staff, because during this pandemic, we had a show last Sunday, Kev. I don't know if you had a chance to listen in, but we dedicated it to we have a mental health counselor on staff in my office. And the pandemic has done a very serious job on the mental health of not only adults and adolescents, but little kids.
Yeah.
It's been really, really difficult. So once again, that issue is on there. And financial planning is also a topic. So those topics are the ones we talk about, because we feel as though it's near and dear to most of us as we listen to the radio. And we're making sausages or whatever you do on Sunday morning. I forgot what you said the other day.
Having pancakes.
Pancake.
And sausage.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
How long have you been doing that? What was the antithesis for you to say, you know, what I do here is important.
Mm.
I think I want to take it to another level, and I want to find a way to reach more people.
Yeah,
when did you decide that?
Well, we've been on a show for 16 years.
Wow.
And what happened was, I was on a show earlier on a Saturday, Mike McNamara, as an attorney talking with him. And I had a partner at that time, and at that time, partner and I had different ideas of where the practice would go. And so we stopped doing Mike's show. And Ed Perry called me, the owner of the radio, the station, called me up on a Thursday or a Friday, and he said, "Hey, are you willing? You figure on what? Would you like to do your own show?" And I said, "That'd be terrific. When could we do that?" And he says, "Sunday." All right. Now here's a guy that has never had any really experience at radio. So I showed up in that chair that you're sitting in, and looking at the producer, and he just went, "You know, you're on," and it started there.
You just went.
But I've got to tell you a secret, and I'll let the secret out to everybody else here. There was a radio show many years ago when I was a kid. The guy's name was Norm Nathan. Norm Nathan was a terrific guy on a radio. And what he did was he invented a person to go with him, to be with him, Marilyn Gorelnik. Marilyn Gorelnik answered the phones for him. Never spoke, of course, because he didn't exist. But he could have conversations with her, and he was terrific at it. So Marilyn decided to join our show. So I knew then, when I got on the show the first time, I wouldn't be alone. I always had Marilyn. She would find things that I couldn't find for myself when I was looking on set. And her bio's on the website, and she gets email. But unfortunately, she never existed. But she's great.
But you have other folks who join you, right?
Absolutely. Mike Topham, who is my accountant. We have Stacy Jordan, who is a specialist on reverse mortgages. We have Blair Breton and Jason Bork do financial planning. Katie Hamilton, who is the mental health counselor. And with those rotating every month, we get them all in here. And so every month, every week, we're talking about one of those topics. And each one brings a great, some really new and interesting things I think are interesting, and I hope they're interesting to our folks. And I tell you, there's a lot of people that listen to WATD, and they listen to these talk shows, and I get more people that come in and say, "I'm glad I can stick a face with that name, with that voice." And it's fun. It's a great way. The hard part, Kevin, about being an attorney is, look, we need clients to perform for. And how do you get them? How do you get them to trust you? And this is a great medium for that. It allows us to present you as a person. Because, okay, you're a lawyer. So what? Everybody's 40,000 lawyers. And give me a break. So what? So what else have you got? How else can I deal with you? How else are you approachable? Can I work with you? You're understanding. Do you think like a consumer? And all of those things are important. And they have to come through. People know really quick when you try to hoodwink them. They do.
Especially these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's got their antenna up pretty high.
And when Google's your best friend, you could definitely find out if someone's hoodwinking you.
Absolutely. So it gives us a chance to do that, and I love the show. It's a great place. But the idea of having an estate plan, those four documents while you're living, are very, very important.
What is the process like, whether it's putting together the will or even putting together a plan?
Okay. As I said earlier, most people, when they come in, they say, "I need a will." And then we do what I basically explained to you, is that there's other things to think about first. But once we get through those things, they start to understand, yeah, there's a lot more to this than I really thought. And we're in it for the long run. I'll cut to the end of it. At the end of our meeting, what we tell people is, look, we know that you're not going to understand everything that we just discussed, because it's pretty difficult legal concepts. So we're going to write a letter to you again, send a letter to you, email or mail it to you, however you want, to go over what we spoke about so that you understand exactly where we're going on and going. And if you are okay with that, then we'll go forward. And it's a fixed fee. We will not nickel and dime you after 2 weeks or 3 weeks. You got a question you want to call up afterwards, or a month you want to call up afterwards, or a year and a half if you want to call up and say, "Hey, look, I've forgotten what this was about. Can you just help me out again?" No problem. Because, Kevin, if you don't do that, people will do things because they say, "Oh, I'm not going to get nickel and dimed, so what I'll do is I'll do this anyway." And it could be something that sinks the whole plan. And that makes me look bad, and I don't want to look bad. I don't want her to look bad, or him to look bad. So call me. We tell you what the ramifications of what you're up to. Here's the plus side. Here's the negative side. You want to do it? Go ahead, but this is what's going to happen, as long as you know. "Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that, so we won't do that." Excellent. Now we're back on track again.
So it sounds to me as though other than understanding the law, understanding the process,
yep.
you also you have to understand customers and customer service as an attorney for what you do.
You sure do. You know, part of what we pride ourselves on, quite mm-hmm. honestly, Kev, is that when you look at the full body of lawyers, okay, and there is 40,000 lawyers in Massachusetts, many of them, not to malign them, many of them got dad and mom to pay for college, dad and mom to pay for law school, and they got out of law school and they started practicing law. They don't have any practical experience in life. They've never had another job. I was an architectural engineer for 15 years before I went to law school.
Get out of here.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got a different perspective on life. You're a consumer. You deal with people. You know, and that comes through when you talk with people. We don't sit there in the office with a button-down suit and a necktie. No, we're regular people. When we go to court, it's a different story. Trust me. You got to wear a coat. As a matter of fact, keep your hands out of your pocket to one of the judges in Plymouth County. He told me that one time. Get your hands out of your pocket. I wasn't pleased with that remark. But anyway, all of this is relationship building. I mean, it's not a cliche. It's really, really true. Because if you don't build a client base that trusts you, that can work with you, that believes in you, I don't know how the hell long you're going to stay in business. I really don't. And some of them are transactional law. They'll do anything. They got a case, they'll say, yeah, no matter what it is, I'll take it. And, Kev, people think lawyers know all the laws and know how to do all of it, and they're all good. That's not true. But lawyers are up there, will grab the case because they need it bad. We don't.
What made you go from being an architectural engineer to saying, what about law? Yeah. What was it?
That's a great question. I happened to be working as an engineer in also doing work with the lawyers to write contracts so that we could get these projects built. Works for a company called Stone and Webster Engineers. They're out of Boston, build nuclear power plants, geothermal power plants, electrostatic power plants, you name it. So we're working with lawyers all the time to say, okay, how can we get this deal done? And the lawyers would always come in and say, nah, we can't do that. Why not? The liability is too high. You can't do that. Well, don't tell me we can't. Figure out how we can. Right. Yeah, because this is what we're in business to do. You know, we're not in business to turn down business. We need to build these things. So I thought, I'm as smart as these people. I'm going to go to law school. So I did. Four and a half years, Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday. As I look back on reflective on it, I think I wasn't probably a very good dad during those times, and I apologize for my kids for that. But I'm glad I did, because it gave me a brand new outlook on life.
Now, did you just strictly deal in the areas of wills and estate planning, or are there other parts of law that you're well versed in as well?
Yeah, we stick to places, areas of law. Probate is really a piece of estate planning, so probate's part of that. It's just a subsection of it. Divorce and family law. I do a tremendous amount of family law, divorce, separation, child support, things like that. And because I was sitting across the table from a woman who was going through a really tough one, and I was about to say, I know how you feel. And I thought, if I say this, this lady's going to hit me right in the head because I don't know how she feels. So that's where Katie Hamilton came in as a mental health therapist that can work through those issues. And we are the only law firm in Massachusetts that has one on staff. How about that right there in Hanover? So, and once again, and real estate, because we do a lot of sellers, buyers, real estate. We don't represent lenders, because I believe that if you're representing a lender, you cannot represent the buyer. They have different issues.
So I would ask you, how has it been navigating a pandemic as an attorney, but yet you have so many different specialties?
It's worked very well. And there are highs and lows, and we can look at any calendar at any year and see where the divorce work will be right after tax season. Right after Christmas, people say we want to stay together for the kids at Christmas time. And then there are certain times in estate planning, financial planning comes in. Once again, that's around, hey, wait a second, tax time, we didn't do the right thing. We need to figure out what our taxes will be. So we can see the cycles of these. And we try to keep one of these area of practice about 25% of our business. Because if you go heavy into something, and we made this mistake many years ago, when you probably recall when the real estate market really tanked, we were very heavily into that because it was big business, everybody was making a lot of money. Then all of a sudden it stopped. So what do you have to do to these paralegals that have really worked for you for so long? Got to lay them off. I said, that will never happen again. I will never do that.
I'll never put myself in a position to do that because it's a painful thing to do. You deal with somebody's lives. That's why I like doing what we're doing, because we're doing something positive for everybody's lives. Even at divorce work, say, you know, you're dealing with a tough time. There was a time when you loved this individual. You said, I do. I'll love you forever. So there was a time. So I'm not saying we're going to go back to that, but maybe some of the real tough hate, the issues and the restraining orders, we could kind of deal with those, that are, you know, put them aside. Maybe we can get through this without that. Because the idea is, at least I hope, just to get on with your life. Simple as that. And if we can do that relatively painlessly, it's going to take effort, both parties' efforts. And usually one of them doesn't want to do that.
Have you ever come across a situation where an individual did not update their will or their estate plan, and they had their ex on it? Have you?
Yes.
What's that like, navigating those waters?
It's many, many times, and it's really sad. There's issues out there now where people get divorced, and the insurance policy still has the ex-wife's name on it, and it didn't change the beneficiary, and the new wife is a bit upset about that, as you can imagine. And that happens more often than not. And that's another reason why the follow-through is so important. A lot of people create trusts, and they do all this kind of stuff. If you don't fund the trust, if you don't rename the beneficiaries, if you don't do a follow-up on your stock and so on, it didn't work. So, yeah, that happens a lot. And it's that's why you got to keep in touch. And goes right back to, if I'm going to get nickeled and dimed every time I call this guy, I'm not going to do it. But if you talk to me all the time and say, hey, look, I'm buying a boat. Should I put it in the trust? Hey, my daughter had a baby, but it looks like it's going to need special needs. We need to do something. No problem. We'll just get it done. But it's just talk. And that's the only way you're going to do that, Kev, is that people trust you and they like you. You know, easy to deal with, in my opinion.
Diane, are you a sports fan?
Yes.
Sox fan?
Yeah. Very sad news yesterday.
Would you mind talking? Do you want to talk about it for a couple of moments?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's kind of, I wanted to take a moment, being a broadcaster and knowing that I watched first off, my when it came to baseball, I always loved the Sox. Probably one of my favorite infield pairings was Rick Burleson,
yeah,
and Jerry Remy.
The Rooster. Yeah.
And then when he made his way into the booth, Jerry Remy.
Yeah.
Nobody liked him.
Really great.
He was good at what he did. And probably my favorite, you know, there were times sometimes when a game is kind of like, it's not really happening.
You just listen to them.
You listen to them, and probably, and I've, you know, I remember watching that game against the Angels, where, you know, some individual decided to throw a piece of pizza.
Oh, and yeah, yeah.
Both Jerry Remy and Don Arcillo, who is now, you know, play-by-play with the Padres. Right. Hearing those two for in almost two innings talk about it was priceless, and some great moments. Yeah, okay, you know, regardless, you're watching because you want to watch the game, but the entertainment and these guys having fun and letting you in on the fun.
Well, they knew that it was going to take 3.5 to 4 hours to go through this, and you just don't want to listen, ball one, strike one, ball one, you know, so let's have some fun doing it. And Remdog was, he was always a favorite of mine, and I'm older, much older than I think than you, but I've watched him play, you know, and he was...
That's what I'm
saying. And he would always talk about, if you wanted to talk baseball with him, he had to talk bunting. He had to talk bunting and stealing. And he, I'll tell you, he could hit. He could hit, and
steal bases, at least for a season or two.
He was.
He could steal bases too. He was a runner.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Stealing bases, he was, and that, I think that's one of the things that really hurt him so much. Psychologically, knees. His knees, and of course that went. Yeah, it was really sad news, and because my son came down to breakfast. It was Sunday morning, and he said Jerry Remy died. I said, you gotta be kidding me. It was like family.
Yep.
You know, it was like when Elvis died. It was like, wow.
Where were you?
Yeah.
I remember that because my mom mourned for 4 straight months.
Yeah.
When Elvis died, because that was her person. She took the trips down to Memphis, yeah. And yeah. You know, hung out at Graceland, yeah, with everybody else.
I've been there. But Jimmy Remy was a lot of fun, and I know they will have some kind of a day set up for him in the spring. And it was great that he got picked to throw the first ball. pitch out just
Dennis Eckley.
It was Dennis Eckley. Yeah, who's incidentally another great announcer. Now
he does a nice job too.
He does.
He's definitely finalist. But hearing both Dennis, hearing the Eck and the Rem Dog together was great.
They play off each other. That's what you need. Salt and pepper. You know, you can't have two. You know, the same. Otherwise, what the hell do you need to do? What do you need the second one for? You a piece of carbon paper.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, no, I love, and I'm really very sad that, obviously, they weren't in the World Series, and I really don't like the Braves.
No, but it would have been ideal to see the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, the trolley,
and the Braves,
the trolley series, as they refer to it. Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun, but that was years ago.
So as we wrap up the show, talk with Mark Green. So what about that law every Sunday? Folks want to, you know, maybe they heard the segment between you and I. They want to find out more information. Maybe there wasn't a pertinent question that I didn't ask, but maybe they want to put to you. How can they get in touch with you and the folks at your office?
It's real simple. You can give us a phone call at 781-792-0202. That's 781-792-0202. Or like everybody else does on email. And it's real simple. It's mark@markgreenlaw.com. Or as in Dorchesterese, mark@markgreenlaw.com. Mark has a K and Green has an E.
I was going to say, you actually, there's an E at the end of N. Right? So we want to make sure we throw that in there.
E at the end of Green. Which reminds me, I got a quick secretary years and years and years ago. It was a brand new secretary, and she was doing letters at the time when guys didn't do their own letters. The secretaries did them. So she came back, and I said, by the way, my name has an E at the end. She came back and spelled my name M-A-R-K-E. I thought she was a hot ticket. I said, we're going to get along really well.
Mark, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Good pleasure. Thank you so much for asking.
And if there's a segment that you'd love to do that maybe we didn't touch upon tonight, maybe down the road we have you back on.
Love to do it.
Excellent. There he is, Mark Green. Thank you for tuning in. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., I promise I'll be back at Broadcast House. Have a good evening.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.